Welcome to Reimagining Atlantis. My name's Tori, and I'll be your host. Herete, or hello. Welcome back, my friends. I have been honored by you all to have come back after doing some research, take a little gander at my podcast, and see that it has expanded by so many new listeners in this past month. Thank you. Especially, I want to say thank you for all my long-term listeners, for those who have stuck around me from the beginning and dealt with my nonsense this whole time. I super-de-duper appreciate you. Thank you all for the time and dedication to the subject that I love, and hopefully I have brought more information than you previously had even begun to ponder. This episode delves into the intriguing discovery made by archaeologists and geologists in the Spain's Andalusia region in 2009 and 2010, roughly 15 years ago. Using state-of-the-art technology, they surveyed the Doña Ana National Park, revealing a long-hidden inland sea and scattered ruins of ancient villages believed to have been Roman or Greek roots. The story of the submerged city of Atlantis has fascinated people for centuries, and we will explore various theories and locations where Atlantis could have existed. We'll delve into the work of researchers such as the American architect who used sonar to reveal man-made walls in the Mediterranean between Cyprus and Syria, and the Swedish researchers who claimed a city lay on the Dogger Bank in the North Sea, which was submerged in the Bronze Age. One of the most exciting discoveries made by British specialists is the presence of a greenish-blue patina coating on the ancient ruins, which has been found to be made of an old alloy of metals. The Atlantean patina on buildings and architecture of cities and temples is described in great detail by Plato. We will discuss the significance of this discovery and what it could reveal about the ancient civilization that once existed there. This podcast will also feature an article with Tim Ackers, head of research at Merlin Burroughs and a maritime historian, who claimed that a, quote, scientific study of material collected from Spain revealed indications of both ancient technological metallurgy and a type of cement never seen before. He also shares how his team discovered the memorial cities created in the likeness of Atlantis by its inhabitants, following the city's likely destruction by a tsunami, and how this discovery gave him confidence that Atlantis was buried in the mudflats. Join us on this episode of Reimagining Atlantis as we dive deep into the mystery of the lost city and explore the possibilities of its existence. My sources, as always, are in my episode description. A team of archaeologists and geologists in 2009 and 2010 used a combination of deep ground radar, digital mapping, and underwater technology to survey the Doña Ana National Park in Spain's Andalusia region near modern-day Cadiz. This was made popular by National Geographic and the movie Finding Atlantis, and after last week's episode, I thought this would be a nice segue into the theory of the Atlantean Spanish mudflats. An American architect used sonar in 2004 to reveal man-made walls a mile deep in the Mediterranean between Cyprus and Syria. In 2007, Swedish researchers claimed the city lay on the Dogger Bank in North Sea, which was submerged in the Bronze Age. The legendary city's submerged ruins are thought to be off the coast of southern Spain, according to experts at Merlin Burroughs. The area, which is concentrated in the Doña Ana National Park and lies north of Cadiz, Andalusia, and is where historians think a sizable inland sea formerly existed. They also assert that 15 more sites scattered along the coastline south and north of the park provide additional proof of this old civilization. Archaeologists believe that the majority of these villages had Roman or Greek roots because both civilizations formally call this region home. British specialists think they have discovered all the elements of Atlantis, as Plato had described, as well as proof of how they were destroyed. They did this by employing novel satellite investigation techniques, aerial photography, and ground investigations of the site. Even though some academics think Atlantis is a myth, Merlin Burroughs believes his discoveries will conclusively show the extinct civilization occurred. Tim Akers, head of research at Merlin Burroughs and a marine time historian, claimed that in addition to discovering Atlantis, they also discovered its inhabitants to be highly developed. He claimed that a, quote, scientific study of material collected from Spain revealed indications of both ancient and technological metallurgy and a type of cement never seen before. A greenish-blue patina coating portion of the remnants has been discovered, and examinations have been revealed that it is made of an old alloy of metals. A patina on the buildings and architecture of the cities and temples that make up this complex is described in great detail by Plato. Patina refers to the thin layer or coating that forms on the surface of an object as a result of age, wear, or the exposure to the elements. It can be intentionally created to give an object an aged or weathered appearance. In art and antiques, patina is also valued because it can add character and depth to an object that may indicate its age and history. Patina can develop on a wide range of materials, including metals, wood, stone, and leather, among others. For example, a copper roof may develop a green patina over time due to exposure to the elements, while an antique wooden chair may have worn patina from years of use. Tim Akers continues, quote, "We have collected samples that have been tested scientifically in a lab in Medina, Italy, which is used to test ancient Roman artifacts, and we have videotaped conclusive evidence. The test findings demonstrate that the artifacts are older than Roman or Greek times and were made by a more highly developed civilizations. The study team led by the United States suggests that the legendary metropolis is said to have been submerged by a tsunami thousands of years ago." Quote, "This is the power of tsunamis. Lead researcher of the exploration of the Spanish mudflats, Richard Frewind, had said, quote, "It's just so hard to understand that it can wipe out 60 miles inland. And that's pretty much what we're talking about," said Frewind, a professor at the University of Hartford who led an international team seeking for the actual location of Atlantis. The researchers examined satellite images of a supposedly drowned city just north of Cadiz, Spain, in an effort to unravel the enigmatic case. They think they have located the long-lost multi-ringed empire known as Atlantis there, submerged in the huge marshes of Doña Ana Park. Researchers have now more evidence and confidence thanks to Frewind's discovery in central Spain of an odd collection of, quote, memorial cities created in the likeness of Atlantis by inhabitants following the city's likely destruction by a tsunami, he said. He continued, with residents of Atlantis who survived the tsunami went inland and established with other cities. The, quote, twist of discovering the monument cities, according to Frewind, has given him confidence that Atlantis was buried in the mudflats, even though it's difficult to know for sure the site in Spain is Atlantis. Searches have concentrated on the Mediterranean and Atlantic as the greatest potential locations for the metropolis, using Plato's in-depth description of Atlantis as a map. Researchers have previously hypothesized that Atlantis was situated on Cyprus, Sardinia, or the Greek island of Santorini. According to Frewind, there has been historical documentation of tsunamis in the area. One of the biggest was a tidal wave that reportedly hit Lisbon on November 1755 and rose to 10 stories. Doña Ana has a horrific past, despite being today's serene nature reserve that birdwatchers like. Every 350 to 450 years, the offshore Azores-Gibraltar transform fault changes, causing enormous earthquakes and tsunamis that completely destroy anything constructed along the coast. Lisbon was completely destroyed in the most recent earthquake, which occurred in 1755. The quote, lost city of Tartessos vanished in the 6th century BCE and its current location in southern Spain. Ancient Greeks, who were aware of the fabled Tartessian monarch, Arganthanos, knew that the Tartessians as traitors. The Andalusian hypothesis was first formulated by the 16th century writers Juan de Mariana from Spain and Johannes van Gorp from the Netherlands. Later, in 1673, José Pellicer de Aseau y Tovar proposed that Atlantean metropolis was situated between the islands of Mayor and Menor, almost in the middle of the Doña Ana marshes. This was later expanded upon by Juan Fernández Amador, expounded on the idea in 1919, claiming that the Atlantean metropolis was situated exactly where Marismas de Hinojo exists now. Adolf Schulten, a German novelist, repeated these assertions in 1922, and Otto Jensen, Richard Henyon, Victor Berrand, and Alina Wishaw continued to support them throughout the 1920s. The proposed locations in Andalusia were outside the Pillars of Heracles and are hints outside yet near the Mediterranean. The quote, island of Atlantis, according to German physicist Rainier Cooney, was actually a section of southern Spanish coast that was submerged by floodwaters between 800 and 500 BCE. The results of Cooney's study were published in the Journal of Antiquity. Quote, these satellite photos show rectangular structures and concentric circles that match very well with Plato's description of the palaces in the city of Atlantis, said Cooney. The island and its city are thought to have been buried in what is now Doña Ana National Park in Spain's Andalusia area when survivors fled inland following a tsunami. The findings made by Fruind and his crew will be covered in the Finding Atlantis program from the National Geographic. The Guadalquivir River periodically soaks the plain of Doña Ana during the winter rainy season, leaving behind a fresh layer of sediment. If Atlantis had indeed been at Doña Ana, it might be currently covered by 20 feet of silt and clay. The research team found submerged shapes that indicate the former existence of a city in the Spain area using electro-imaging equipment used to find oil resources. The results of subsequent investigations revealed a plethora of information, including carved objects and confirmation of wood from 440 BCE discovered in core samples obtained from the depth of more than 40 feet. Methane was also present in these samples, which Fruind views as an additional crucial indicator. I often teeter-totter between Northwest Africa and Southern Spain for the location of Atlantis. I seem to always favor Northwest Africa, though. I recognize the famous bull runs in Spain, and my brain often points to the bull runs as evidence of past bull worship. The running of the bulls and the San Fermín festival are two distinct festivals in Pamplona, which is located in northeastern Spain. Spain is still a very acceptable answer, as it was part of Atlantis proper. As a reminder, here's Plato, quote, to his twin brother, who was born after him, and obtained his lot the extremity of the island, towards the Pillars of Heracles, facing the country which is now called the region of Gades, in that part of the world. I recognize that the wording is weird and that it could mean anything. After all, Seville is facing Cadiz, Sancta Petri could be facing Cadiz, North Africa could be facing Cadiz. With a bit of imagination, heck, even Florida could be facing Cadiz. The former city of Gades is widely accepted as modern-day Cadiz, Spain, which is located on the southwestern coast of Spain near deep eddying Okeanos. I read to you an article about the ancient temple dedicated to Baal Melkart, located in Sancta Petri. As a reminder, this is a small island located about 10 miles or 16 kilometers south of Cadiz. The entire area is littered with ancient man-made stone structures. But do you know what I noticed in the area that it doesn't have? A mountain that descends towards the sea, and a mountain within 50 stadia that's not very high on any one side. Chestnuts are sporadic around Spain, but not many within southern Spain. Furthermore, the Atlanteans had a great deal of ivory available to them. Here's Plato. In the interior of the temple, the roof of ivory curiously wrought everywhere with gold and silver and orichalcum. This could be ambiguous, as this just says the ceiling was made of pure ivory. Well, thankfully, Plato does tell us how large Poseidon's temple was. Quote, here was Poseidon's own temple, which was a stadium in length, and a half a stadium in width, and of proportionate height, having a strange, barbaric appearance. A Greek stadium was typically about 600 feet long and 100 feet wide, so a stadium in length would be about 600 feet. Half a stadium in width would be about 500 feet. To calculate the area of the ceiling, we need to multiply the length by the width. Since the height is proportionate, we do not have its exact measurements, but we can do a rough estimation. That would be 600 times 50, giving us a grand total of 30,000 square feet. So we would need enough ivory to cover an area of 30,000 square feet to line a ceiling that is a stadium in length, a half stadium in width, and of proportionate height. I asked ChatGPT how much ivory would be needed to cover 30,000 square feet, and I got this answer. Ivory is not a suitable material for covering a ceiling due to ethical and practical concerns. However, for the sake of answering your question, let's assume that we're using ivory tiles or panels to cover the ceiling. The statue of Athena Parthenos, which was housed in Parthenon Temple in Athens, Greece, was made using a combination of ivory and gold. The statue, which was created by the Greek sculptor Phidias in the 5th century BCE, stood over 38 feet tall and depicted Athena, the Greek goddess of wisdom, crafts, and warfare. The statue was made using a wooden core, which was then covered in ivory plates to create a smooth surface. The ivory was then further embellished with gold leaf to add additional detail and to create the illusion of the goddess's clothing and armor. The statue's face and hands were made from ivory, while the hair and clothing were made from gold. The use of ivory in the statue of Athena Parthenos was significant, as it added to the level of luxury and extravagance into one piece. The ivory was rare and expensive material, and its use in the statue would have conveyed a sense of power and wealth to those who saw it. The statue was also seen as a symbol of the power and prestige of Athens itself, and as such, was an important part of the city's cultural and political identity. The weight of each ivory tile or panel would depend on the thickness and density, which can vary widely depending on the quality of the ivory and how it was processed. However, ivory is a very dense and heavy material, so it would be safe to assume that each tile or panel would weigh several pounds. Therefore, to determine the total amount of ivory needed, we would need to know the weight of each tile or panel and multiply it by the number of tiles or panels needed. However, as mentioned earlier, using ivory for this purpose is not recommended due to ethical concerns, and there are many alternative materials that can be used for ceiling coverings that are more sustainable and ethical. Thanks, ChatGPT. Ivory in the Bronze Age was harvested from both elephants and hippopotamuses. I will end this with a little quote that I found. Aristotle said that around 300 BCE, that elephants were numerous on the lands around the pillars of Heracles. When this has been quoted, it has been understood to mean that there were elephants on the, quote, African side, as there is later historical evidence of elephants in North Africa, example, Hannibal's elephant, except his own personal elephant, which was believed to have been Asian, because it was bigger than the rest, which were the North African elephants. And for those who haven't heard about the North African elephants, I've talked about it in the past, perhaps I'll bring it up again, but they were prevalent in North Africa. They were much smaller than the current elephants that we know now, but they were hunted to extinction during the Roman era. Aristotle may have wanted to include Iberia too as having elephants, but this is not made clear at all. What we do know is that elephants are excellent swimmers. The Straits of Gibraltar are only 14 kilometers wide, which is nothing for an elephant. So suppose there were elephant populations on the, quote, Moroccan side. In that case, there's a good chance that there were populations on the Spanish side, or at least elephants were occasional or even regular visitors. Thank you so much for continuing to listen. Your support means everything to me. If you want to help make this podcast grow, please subscribe and tell just one other person about this podcast today. We are each our own hero in this story we call life. That means one person has the power to change everything. Who is the one person you tell today, hero? Let's help keep Atlantis alive, or at least reimagined. A new episode will be released every Thursday at 9 p.m. See you then.